50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
It's me, Carter Spilliards, here bringing y'all another fantastic episode of Film Fracas. With me, as always, is Robbie DeShazer.
What's up, what's up?
Phoenix Zarola.
Still sick.
And the Shantabulous, Shannon Widener.
Hello, everyone. It's me.
Follow us all on Byte. We just got Byte accounts.
Except for Phoenix. Well, except for Phoenix.
Phoenix will have one by now, though.
Phoenix does not have Byte yet.
I'll have Byte.
We'll all be viral on Byte.
But what's your name on Byte going to be?
Well, you shot down Byte as Phoenix, so
Byte as
I
Phoenix.
Have to keep thinking. Mm.
Gotcha.
That sounds almost too much like tight ass.
It does. It sounds a little bit...
I mean, it's what you want. It's what you make of it.
I'm just, you know, I don't like being typecast.
As what? What are you going to be typecast
as? Having a loose ass.
Well, you have a bomb ass.
I know. Yeah. That's what I want.
It's the difference between
should I just be bomb ass Phoenix?
I think lame be cross platform. All
right.
It's easier for everyone.
What's wrong with being cross platform?
Nothing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Except my Instagram is different from my Twitter.
I don't know why. I mean, mine is too. Mine's got an underscore because
mine also does.
It's because the person who has Robbie DeShazer, who's never posted, just sitting there without account.
Mine is because Instagram does not have character restriction on the usernames, or at least not one big enough for me. Because Twitter stops you right at 15.
Oh,
and I have 16 in Carter Spilliards.
It's just 1 yard.
Or else it would all be Carter Spilliards, and it can't tell you how much it bothers me when people leave the S off at the end of my name.
A Spilliard.
It is a tremendous pet peeve of mine. Anyway, y'all don't care about my pet peeves.
I don't care about your pet peeves.
Y'all here to
our
hear...
Our production design pet peeves.
Oh, giving it away.
Whoa,
this
man.
Episode of Film Fraggers.
We ain't beating around the bush yet.
Production design with our Best Picture winners. last week, we said goodbye to Rocky.
Rocky.
Unfortunately. Apparently, its acting was just... Anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah, so it lost because the shit actors, I guess. Sylvester Stallone, no good. Carl Weathers, who?
You sound bitter.
What?
You sound
needlessly
bitter.
Ruthless.
I'm actually not that bitter. It was pretty low on my list. Yeah. I think it was my next to last.
Yeah, it was.
but now we're here to talk about production design. And the way we do production design is not strictly just, it's kind of all encompassing of the production. So it is, you know, the production design itself, but also kind of art direction, color, and costumes also.
Pretty much everything you look at that's not cinematography.
Yeah, everything you're looking at that's not the way the camera moves or the lighting is considered production design. So,
yeah. If you've listened to past seasons, you know how we do it.
Yeah. So just, you know, so everyone knows we're on the same page.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
But,
what are we doing it this time? Alphabetically?
Sure, let's go alphabetically. So that means we start with Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Well, if it's The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, then it's not actually.
Yeah, but we're going to go with Birdman. I know there's an or, so we could pick one or the other.
Yeah, so we get to choose.
But I think it's best to start with the Birdman.
Well, if it's the Birdman.
You know what? It is just Birdman. It's not the Birdman.
It's cleaner that way?
Yeah, it's cleaner.
Not the Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, just Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
It's clean.
Cleaner.
Yes. Birdman, production design. I think...
Fine.
Good.
It is good, and because the production design in this film is so kind of wrapped up in the behind-the-scenes actual... theatrical production that's going on, and some of that I think is really well done. Like, I particularly like the design of the sheet choice might be good, or maybe that's more of a comment on I like the shot of Naomi Watts and Ed Norton underneath the bed sheet. But there's a lot of good stuff there. There's a lot of good stuff. I'm thinking of Andrea Riseborough when she's giving her monologue, and you see like all of the fog and the trees and the antlered. I think that's all very, very good and works.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of all the stuff that's going on in. What's his name? Riggins, right?
Riggin Thompson.
All the cool stuff in his dressing room.
Yeah, all the dressing room stuff. I particularly like the quote he has. The "a thing is a thing, not what is said of that thing." Like, it's like a nice character piece of like what kind of guy he is and what he really troubles him and stuff like that. Like, it adds thing. I like the movie poster, and I like the
Birdman poster. The Birdman 3 poster is very good.
It's good, and I like the crease on it, and it makes like the cross. Folded, and it makes like the Jesus cross on it, and kind of adds like another. Like silly metaphor to it.
I love the Birdman costume when we get to see it.
Birdman costume's great.
The Birdman costume's
got a great like texture and look to it.
Yeah. It feels very much what it's going for like that 2000s superhero like thing that it's trying to mask.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. The production designer for this film, I'll do the role of Phoenix this week, is Kevin Thompson, who is the production designer most recently for Ad Astra, starring Brad Pitt. Did an episode of Succession in 2018.
Hey.
Other things, Trainwreck, The Girl on the Train.
Train to Busan.
The Bourne Legacy.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I'm trying to see if there's anything that anyway.
I think...
Igby Goes Down.
Oh.
This is a good example of like everything's where it should be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're not like missing anything. It all feels very authentic.
Yeah.
They're shot in a theater.
Yeah. So shot in the St. James Theater.
Yeah. Which helped.
Fantastic location scouting.
Because it was already kind of all there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for the behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. That was all shot on like a set where they made like the hallways and stuff like that.
But I think, just the set of like the actual set of like the kitchen that they're doing the play in, and then also like. You know, when you wind through all the hallways and stuff, you have all the cords and everything hanging around, you know, looking like the backstage of
it. It is fun to see something that is artificial and then see something that is like even more artificial than that in the form of like the actual stage on the stage.
Yeah. And I think I like Riggins' like trench coat thing he wears and, you know, he's got very kind of muted clothing.
The wig that they have for him is very good.
Yeah,
it's, the tidy whities. Like, I mean, iconic.
Yeah,
selected perfectly.
When they make fun of the gun for having the orange piece on the end, I think that's really funny.
I also really like the look of the bar that he meets the critic in, particularly the horizon lines and the fact that like there's one continuous lamp, and I know this might be more of a comment on cinematography, but. There's one main lighting component that's wraps all the way around the bar, and it looks like a horizontal bifurcating line that is really nice and gives some really good look there. But it's designed not that I don't really think they have control over that space, but I thought it was selected very well. I quite liked it.
I love that the liquor store that he goes into. We mentioned it with how cool it looks when the camera goes through all of it, but like those dangling lights is kind of. Those different colored fairy lights are very, very cool.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I don't know if that's just how... I don't know how much of this is location scouting, which is very unique locations, or how much of it was planned and purposefully done.
And you know, Times Square, crazy that they were able to reproduce it. It's just...
I know.
So true to life. But some really good location scouting, definitely, for this film. And the world of Birdman, aside from just being New York City, feels like... a slice of something particularly unique.
The fact that it feels like New York City, but then also kind of bizarro New York City. Like, like it's all very familiar, but something not quite right.
Right.
Which I think is very good. Yeah. It's kind of a testament to building the universe that they're living in.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it feels, you're right. Yeah, it feels like it is New York City, and that's what, you know, clearly what it is. They walk around the streets of New York, and that's, but it also, it feels like the world of Birdman. It doesn't feel like, this isn't a movie like where New York is the third character.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, this isn't about the idiosyncrasies of New York and how quirky the city is, but like it's about, you know, it just happens to take place in New York, but it's so much more about the world that is built in Riggins' head.
Yeah,
for sure. Right, I agree. Right.
I think I found out when I was looking at the locations for this movie that In 2014, when I was last in New York, I think I stayed in a hotel very, very close by where it was shot, because Motown, the musical, the theater mm-hmm. that was there, was visible on our morning walks to our to the Dave & Buster's that we all ate at, because we went for a large high mm-hmm. school trip. So, but they were not filming at the same time. They filmed in 2013. We were there in 2014, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like,
gotcha.
It's all so close by.
Yeah, that's love cool. it.
I mean, I already mentioned that, like, a friend of the show, Austin Zussen, and I went and saw Something Rotten at the mm-hmm. St. James.
At St. James, yeah.
And, which also, if you ever get a chance to see Something Rotten, it's a fun show. But it is it's a gorgeous theater. It is small, and I think they make some, it's hard to, like, understand it when they talk about it in the movie that, like, it's a smaller Broadway theater. Mm-hmm. But, like, it really is. Like, there are some places out there, particularly, I can't think of the different names of the theaters, but where they show The Lion King, where Phantom ran for a very long time mm-hmm. as well. Those are giant theaters that house a lot of people. Tons of people can see it. You know, Wicked's currently in a theater that where tons of people can see Wicked. Like, but the St. James is pretty small in comparison.
I think it's less than 300 seats. St. James, or something to that effect. I'd have to look up the exact size.
It's less than 1,000, but it's not quite three. Yeah, it's still, or maybe it might be just over 1,000. I can't remember. It's technically
the St. James has 1,710 seats over three levels. It is one of actually the larger.
Oh really?
If we've got the,
it feels small compared to
Frozen is there right now?
Is Frozen at the St. James right now?
Yep.
Well, then never mind. Strike everything I said. They make
but it feels very intimate. Based
yeah, and
on,
that first
like,
level is very small, and that. The mezzanine level, that second level, is pretty small as well. So I don't know where they're fitting people.
Oh, yeah, and it does say in the Wikipedia page that Birdman was filmed there in 30 days. But, yeah Frozen's there right now.
I forgot that Frozen actually opened on Broadway. But
yeah. Anyone have anything else to say about Birdman?
Go!
All right. moving on to Chicago.
Yeah.
I think this has actually got some great production.
This is one of the absolute strengths of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
The costumes,
the production
are
design
fantastic.
Is crazy. Yeah. The stylization of everything, the costumes, the numbers, like the jail. I think of the puppet show.
Yes.
I think of I think of the cell block.
Even the courtrooms kind of threw like a little bit of a lens.
Yeah, the courtrooms.
Well, courtroom
all the costumes,
in daylight, and then courtroom in the actual in the vignettes are.
Yeah,
because
it's also like, it's a period piece, and so you have people, period appropriate clothing.
Some of it's period appropriate, and then some of it is very stylistic and updated. Mm-hmm. I think this takes a lot, not necessarily directly from, but I think it takes a lot from like the style of some other musicals we had seen preceding this. I think Moulin Rouge and its kind of aesthetic has a very big effect on this in particular, and just updating stuff that is supposed to be a period piece and making it a little bit more modern without making it unfamiliar to the time, without making it seem out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the neon floating sign of Roxy. It might be
the red production design.
Yeah. Also required viewing is the SNL spoof with Kellyanne Conway. The floating Kelly is also something. Yeah. But that I think might be, if I had to pinpoint a favorite production design element, I do quite like that. And her costume when she's the dripping shimmery I don't know what you'd call it. It looks somewhere between like a leotard and like with fringe kind of thing, but it looks really good. And she, it helps a lot, especially because there's so many mirrors in that, particular sequence. But yeah, really like that. Those two elements a lot.
I'm particularly fond of, the wall of lights that then Tommy gun into Voxy and Velma. that is pretty fun to watch and pretty nice to see. And yeah, this, the production design in this movie is really great. It's all really like highly stylized and,
I love John C. Reilly's Mr. Cellophane costume.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very, very good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And
it's like old-timey clown.
And it's not so, like, I think as one of kind of him and Richard Gere are kind of the only male characters who get like an interesting costume or a stylized costume at any point for their musical numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, all of the female characters have several different costumes that they do in varying looks, whether they're in the prison or in, you know, the cell block tango outfits, which are very different from, you know, the all that jazz outfits. Or but they both get some pretty cool outfits, which I think maybe get overshadowed by how flashy some of the other outfits are. But I think
the tearaway pants of Richard Gere's definitely are an item of clothing.
Yes. But
yeah.
I mean, I don't always love the aesthetic of this film, but I think that it's definitely choices that are knocked out of the park that are done to the extreme that...
It has a committed aesthetic.
Yeah, it's very... I can't knock it for being committed to its look when, even though it may not be my favorite, like, choice. You know, it's hard to say that it's bad because it's not bad. It's very well done. It's very committed to. I feel very similarly about some other films from the era as well.
And this was John Muir, I believe, who was the production designer?
I was doing a bad job of playing Phoenix.
I'm just saying.
The filmography that he's most recently worked on.
Yeah.
It doesn't say, or I'm just looking him up on Google. I don't have the IMDb app up.
I will
pull that up. But yeah, no, it's definitely, it's flashy, it's glitzy, it's everything you would expect. Even in some of the more muted moments, like I go back to the design of Roxy's bedroom and the look of the bureau and like the period appropriate wallpaper. Even like a lot of the objects that are on I guess it's still a bureau. It's that nightstand, I suppose, but when Fred is putting his tie on and everything, and you get that shot of everything that's on there. But it's nice.
All right,
did win for best costume design.
Yeah,
and won for best art direction.
So John Muir, his filmography includes the recent Lady and the Tramp movie that just came out on Disney Plus, Mary Poppins Returns, X-Men: Days of Future Past, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Wanted from 2008, Dreamgirls, Memoirs of a Geisha, Chicago, like Ali from a year earlier, X-Men, the original X-Men, and most importantly, 2003's The Haunted Mansion.
Sure.
Which, if it has anything going for it, it has production design.
It's true.
They did a very good job of recreating the aesthetic of the Haunted Mansion.
All right. Anybody have anything to say about Chicago?
I'm good.
I'm also good.
It's good. Good stuff.
Colleen Atwood was the costume designer for this one. So, props to her, because so many of the things we were talking about were the costume design. I like this one a lot. Started.
Yeah, me too. Are we counting the T's? We'll move on to The Departed next?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if we should do all the thes together at the end.
That would be so funny, but dumb.
Departed next. This movie, I have mixed feelings.
Production designed by Christy Zia. Or Z, I don't know if it's...
Because a lot of it is supposed to be that kind of... There's a lot of X's. That's, I think, more in the cinematography.
And I think that's some of it in the direction, too.
The direction. Because, depending on where they were, a lot of it's, like, the lighting of, like, the shadows of X's. And
well, there's also, like, in the airport, there's, like, the
Yeah, there's X's a couple shots where there's physical sets that
are X's. There's, like, windows that are X's. Yeah. There's, like, literal, drawn X's on, like... With like
lots,
is this the production design?
That's true. Yeah, there is some, but I think I think the production design in this is, it's all right.
It's adequate.
I think the muted color palette's obviously very much kind of part of the film. It's supposed to be definitely kind of more muted.
I like the bar where the mob hangs out. It's very well designed, and it feels grimy. Everything like it's. It's not groundbreaking. It's not something that hasn't been done before, but also it does feel very appropriate. I like that back room a lot. It's very sparse.
I like Frank Costello's house, his place.
His wardrobe is wild.
Yeah, his wardrobe is
everything
cool.
about his costumes is like the standout, are I think.
Very good.
Yeah,
very
everything good. Involving him, I think, is where
like
it's
the,
at.
The dressing gown.
That tie.
Like,
he's got one tie that's freaking
all the leopard print.
It is leopard print. I was like, was it leopard print or tiger print? I just knew it was an animal.
Some standouts from Christy Zia's career. The Intern from 2015 with Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway. The Leftovers. The show The Leftovers.
Dope.
Tower Heist.
Always here for Leftovers representation.
Revolutionary Road, The Departed, The Manchurian Candidate. What else are we running? I thought Philadelphia. So we talked about Philadelphia last episode. Goodfellas and The Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
So definitely has a knack for doing some police stations. There's
real world, yeah.
Yeah. Which world. I think that the that conference room with the, it is mostly populated with actors, but all those actors are very, like, are dressed appropriately. Mm-hmm. Like that conference table where all the briefings go down, or I guess that briefing, is it a briefing room? I guess it's more of a briefing room, but that's very well designed. I like all the glass windows and doors throughout that police station. Once again, I don't know if that's a set or if that's a location that was chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Could be either. Could have just been like some kind of multi or mixed purpose area that.
It could have been. Yeah, I think so. I also think the residential spaces are very subtly done. I really like the and when, I guess this is location choice, but what is it? Is it Vera Farmiga's apartment? Before she's, or when she's in the transition of moving into Matt Damon's place, the galley kitchen, though, I think is really, really important to showing, like, the big romantic build-up sequence between her and Leonardo DiCaprio, and the way that the residential worlds are populated are pretty good, especially, I'm thinking about her doing Revolutionary Road, the home being a very central space that can be done a lot of different ways, particularly, so... Yeah, I mean, there's definitely
practiced. I mentioned it in cinematography. Person. There's a lot of scenes that are shot inside of cars or shots of cars. Those are all clearly chosen for reasons, and they're not just, you know, the key grips car was being, you know. I think we're kind of, I think, I thought about that the other day. We're like, we're, you know, some of us have been on sets for like smaller video shoots or like smaller productions where it's like, oh, we use what we have, and you're like, you don't think about the selection.
It's a 2008
of like,
Jeep. It's a 2008 Jeep.
You don't think about the selection of vehicles or like, you know, that home is, you know, probably the, even if they're shooting in someone's real home, it's chosen for a reason. It's not, you know, just the cinematographer has a house that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, thank God it's not a student apartment, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And I think this is actually like a, more, it's definitely on the lower, the like least impressive of Scorsese production design, but like it's pretty consistent with like his other stuff. A lot of his production design in his movies are very realistic and very grounded and just not stylized, not like in like so in your face, but just more like in the play in the background and kind of just give that like realistic feel. I think this one even more so is maybe a little bit more stylish just because of like all the X stuff and then all the like Frank Costello stuff, whatever. But it's pretty par for the course for him, I think. It's just, you know, it doesn't try to be too in your face or have too much going for it. It just tries to portray reality, portray Boston.
Another thing I guess I'd like to give a shout out to is the decrepit building that's used a lot, whether it's the... rooftop or the, I don't know what kind of space you'd call it.
Kind of that lobby level where...
Yeah, you see the one guy who realizes that Leonardo DiCaprio is the rat and he dies on whatever couch it is, but it looks like there's a bar there. That whole area, I think it's nice.
Yeah.
I like that space being particularly utilized. So it's got that like dark cavernous quality that like, you know, I would want. It's got the barred up windows and all that, so...
And this movie definitely doesn't, in the production design, do class as starkly as some other movies have. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, I think, some, you know, it's very interesting to see kind of the two sides with, you know, Matt Damon's character kind of lives in an almost literally an ivory tower while you've got, you know, the foreclosed on buildings and the people that are, you know, committing crimes that are in, you know, slums essentially at different points, which are, you know, it is fun to see a production that gets to do kind of both, that doesn't just like, I think it's very tempting to do a crime movie that is all in the seedier parts of a metropolis.
Mm-hmm. And
But to see it and kind of, you know, see the cops and their lives in downtown and stuff like that, as opposed to where the criminals are, is, you know, it's fun to see.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a specific choice, whether that's in the writing or the production design is up for debate, but I wanted to at least shout that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
How many, do we have three movies left?
Three left, so.
We should take a break.
Quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 5208 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right, Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action. We're back.
Welcome back to Film Fracas.
It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe we didn't finish this episode.
I know.
And just stopped posting.
I'm just glad we could all come back together for this. I haven't seen y'all in ages.
Phoenix has been divorced twice.
Yeah, it's been a really rough stretch for me. But we got Brett back, thankfully.
Hey, guys. It's me, Brett.
Thanks, Brett.
Yeah,
thank you for coming back, Brett.
Robbie doesn't have a beard anymore.
I don't.
He's bald.
He lost all
the hair on his face. None of eyebrows either. And eyelashes, they all fell out.
An entire Brazilian.
It's just all smooth.
Yep. And this Carter fell into a vat of Nair.
What was a state prison like?
Oh, state prison?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, I hit stop on the recording and then cops immediately busted in and took Carter away for tax fraud.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah, it's rough. Sorry,
caller.
Yeah.
Luckily, though, 3 years later, this is still a very good reference.
Fuck off.
Yep.
Yep. The lasting impact.
Succession entering season 5.
Yeah.
It's the new Game of Thrones.
It is.
It is now the new Game of Thrones.
Westworld.
So sad that Westworld got canceled after 3 seasons.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know, though. You don't get that much HBO in the slammer, or do you? Who knows?
You probably get some.
Yeah, if it's a nice white coat. Well,
luckily,
it's a state
prison. If it's a white coat, yeah. If it's
you were cellmates with a now felon Donald Trump.
Oh.
Right?
Clearly.
What are the odds?
Well, you both committed.
Sweet, sweet HBO access.
You both got caught for
it's a win
tax fraud when you could have been caught for much worse crimes.
Anyway.
But
I just think President Kanye's been making some...
some interesting decisions.
And Shannon, you manage a hedge fund?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I don't know.
And by that, she means all the money for Over the Hedge.
For Over the Hedge.
For Over the Hedge sequels, yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's a very niche section of DreamWorks.
The Over the Hedge Fund. but luckily...
Did that win Best Picture?
Over the Hedge? Yes, okay. It did.
It did?
Twice, actually.
Should have picked it.
Oh, yeah.
They had him come up, and then they had him go back to their seats, and then they had him come up and do it all over again.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah.
It was like La La Land Moonlight, but it was just like, no, we just want to give you the award again.
Yeah, please just come back so we can give you an extra Oscar.
Yeah.
But they really just wanted Avril Lavigne to make an appearance.
Yeah.
That was it.
Anyway, we're talking about... Robbie just immediately tweeted over the hedge fund.
I liked Over the Hedge Fund.
Oh, damn it. This is going to ruin the joke about it being 3 years later.
Oh, no, because they totally thought that's what was happening.
What?
It's okay. Time's a constant.
Well, we invented a time machine.
How would we send this back in time to come out and
tweet that
on
Technology
Friday.
Is changing every day. Anyway.
Let's talk about The Godfather.
Is that the next alphabetically?
Yeah. G.
Yes.
Are all the those going to end up together anyway?
They already have. It's just those two.
Yeah.
You were like, let's put all the those at the end.
That's up to you. Anyway, Godfather. Oh, my God.
The father is good in this one, and so is the production design.
The production design is
very great.
Is some
very great.
Yes. Never has a wedding seemed more beautiful,
luscious.
The wedding scene.
The wedding. The office, every room, every
baptism,
the baptism,
everything in Italy.
Italy, the streets, oranges.
Yeah, the orange garden,
architectural design,
the backyard,
a plant.
Like
it just costumes, it's all
the
done.
Suits.
Yeah,
just
so well, so well.
Any kind of rooms, the restaurants.
And they're all so dark, like,
yeah,
you know, the color
but
logic,
also
but it works
vivid.
Well. It's, yeah. Exactly, that's
dark
the thing.
Dark and vivid. This movie's so colorful
mm-hmm.
for being such a dark movie.
Yeah, it takes, I mean, like, oranges, only a selection of the color wheel.
Orange is definitely, you know, talked about a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the color orange, just warm colors in general.
Yeah, a lot of warm
all
colors.
Over this movie.
Yeah.
This is production designer Dean Tavularis, known for... Most recently, haven't been. Did he pass away? I'm really worried he
the
passed
period
away.
Cars.
Oh, yeah.
No, he is alive. He just hasn't worked in a while. He's retired. But,
The Cars.
Known for The Parent Trap, Rising Sun.
Which Parent Trap?
The newest one, the Lindsay Lohan.
Did they win for this movie?
Peggy Sue Got Married, The Outsiders.
Okay.
Apocalypse Now, that's a big one. All three Godfathers, like I said. Yeah. A pretty accomplished production designer, but not, you know, prolific, I guess, would be what.
Godfather only won 3 Oscars.
Did it really?
Yep.
But what did it win for?
It was nominated for costume design.
It was Best Picture, Brando,
Best
and
Picture,
directing,
Brando,
right?
And director, yeah.
Yeah.
And writing, best writing.
No, it
so
didn't
writing
win. It
didn't
win
director.
Did not win director. It won
best writing,
won.
Writing, actor, and picture. Who won director that year?
That's a
did
good
win
question.
That year.
I'm about to look it up.
But yes, nominated for best costume design, and yeah,
that was the 45th.
Did they used to split up
Academy
score
Awards?
By dramatic and comedic?
There's a lot of
because I see
a lot of
best music original dramatic score.
Yeah. All right.
Very interesting.
Let's see. Oh, well, I can understand the win, too. Best director went to Bob Fosse for Cabaret.
Oh.
Yeah.
Excellent director, excellent film. So
yes.
Definitely understand that. Also, I think Francis Ford Coppola got his Oscar later.
He got his yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I also had Joseph Mankiewicz for Sleuth, Coppola, Bob Fosse. Wow.
Yeah.
Stacked year.
But back to the production design for The Godfather.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the locations are so well chosen.
I
mean, it's not a huge like piece of production design. It's not even something super, I think, necessary to the plot. I just have a vivid picture in my mind of like that driveway and front door at Don Corleone's house. Like,
it looks like a fortress.
It does. And like, I can just picture like the cars pulling up and people walking to that front door.
James Caan just being like, "No, I'm angry. Y'all aren't doing your job. I'm gonna, you know, just pulling very, very quickly out of that driveway." Yeah, it's
like
a lot happens there. Actually,
yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that goes on, like getting out of the car.
Mm-hmm. And like it is important. I guess it's important to see people coming and going, but like that location and that, at least the side that they shoot it from is very vivid in my head. Like I can
because Diane Keaton's character comes back to ask where Michael is. You see James Caan leaving to his death, basically, and then Michael determining whether or not he wants to be the godfather of Connie's baby. It all happens there, although I think that last scene is reversed. You see the opposite side of the driveway instead of the other side. But it is it's a fortress.
Yeah, it's a great location.
Impenetrable.
Yeah.
I mean, all the rooms and the offices inside that, are
even
also very
the
well
facade
done.
Of the hospital. I also quite like the hospital itself. I mean, the production design is you know
adequate,
really really effective. But I do like that outside a lot, especially with the baker who's lighting a cigarette and real nervous, like right outside. It's nice, and the little bit of Christmas lights that are right outside. Yeah. It's done really well, and it's very efficient when it needs to be, and then it's really lush and, you know, filled in and spacious. And
When the hit goes down, I love that tiny hallway that you kind of watch it all happen from, where they kick down the door and go in, and then they come back like that. It feels very claustrophobic in there, which is very cool. Like, it's there's so many just like locations that are used for just like a beat or two that are like, are like almost sense memories. You feel like you could step in and walk around in them.
Yeah, the Hollywood producer director's home, that also I think is one that just sticks out because it is so early, but you really live in that bedroom.
Who picked the horse?
The horse head?
Is the horse is the horse production design?
Yeah,
or is the horse design a performance?
No, the horse. I mean, it's a prop. They made it.
The head or the actual horse?
The actual horse.
The horse is an actor.
I mean, the head is a prop.
The head is a prop.
The use is arguably a story choice.
The bed with all the the lovely silk sheets.
Sheets, though.
Covered in
That's got to be a horse blood. 1500 count. I mean, those are Egyptian cotton.
Do you think there's a difference when you're picking like fake blood, whether you're if you're doing a horse blood or a human blood?
Probably.
Yeah I'm sure.
Shade, like I imagine.
A thickness.
I would believe it.
Like an amount, I would for sure think that too.
If it's Tarantino,
By the way, the score division was best original score for dramatic feature and then best adapted score. So if there was a play or a musical that they then turned into a movie. So Cabaret was included in that. And Man Full of Mantra, I think. They only had two nominees in that category.
Gotcha.
So I imagine it was a niche fairly category, niche that they probably did away with. Well, they had a lot of, I mean, up until that point, they were having a lot of musicals pretty frequently. So I can understand.
Yeah.
Its function, but it was already starting to wane, I think,
in the 70s. So.
Yeah. I also, I mean, we talked a little bit about the costumes in the movie, but the costumes are really great. I think, too, first, I really like James Caan's character, how he always has like the tank top and like the pants and stuff like that to make, because he's so eccentric and like such like a like manly, like energetic guy or whatever. But I also just really like to point out and highlight the Michael Corleone's like costumes throughout the movie. How he starts off with like then the soldiers like the soldier jacket and like clean cut, and he and then later on he has like the like New Yorker like suit or whatever, but then he, you know, transitions and has like the greased back hair and like
the
bright pink tie and stuff like that. Like the costumes really like show his like change over time. Like you see, he starts wearing like the darker, like more vibrant colors like the mob does after starting off really subdued and like in the outside. It's a really nice touch. It really adds to like the believability of like his change at the end. It's really good.
Definitely.
Yeah. It is hard. Like if you know what the end is to look at the beginning and go, this clean cut soldier is going to be the Godfather? I don't believe it.
Yeah. Color me shocked.
Yeah.
Also the bright red rose on Brando's tux at the beginning. Iconic. Looks great.
Yeah. Some
also a big fan of the cat, but that's more performance.
Really incredible stuff.
The cat is an actor.
Yeah.
Performance 100%.
All right. Now we're going to On the Waterfront. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I actually really like the production design in this. Kind of going back to what we were talking about in performances in the last episode. I think the like the like the shipyards and everything kind of give it there's a sense of authenticity with it. That I think is there. I think all the costumes, like we said, there aren't that many performers. And so it's kind of like there's not that
very pared down group.
Yeah, but I think what's there is good. And I think the kind of the design of the yard.
Brush me up on something. Is this? It's not period. The cars. It is fairly.
It's
contemporary to the time, which was the early 50s.
Gotcha.
54.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it would have been made in 53.
I was just trying.
It's contemporary to the time. Which was, so, you know,
think older. Of it similarly to The Departed then.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I think it like we said, it's very much the kind of movie that feels more like a stage play. But that the way they captured it, it feels much more authentic, like in a world and a lived in world, and not necessarily with like tableaus or you know, on a set.
It feels
very kind of out in the world, in the open. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is the production design of like the yards, the ships, the cars, the interiors, all that.
Yeah. And like, you know, objects are so important to like, you know, the economy of this movie and like,
objects in this economy?
In this economy? I mean, like they talk about the bananas, they talk about alcohol as well. And, you know, that just being mise en scène being like the lifeblood of this film and why people are willing to, you know, die, I suppose. You're good. It's really good. But favorite spaces, I still am a really big fan of.
Yeah.
Of the
The rooftop?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Remember, I'm a big fan of barbed wire and fences, but I think it does look very good, the actual coop. The church as well. Extremely dark, and then you get the stained glass, even though it is in black and white, you've got a sense
the at the very end of the movie, they've come down to like the little building they have.
Oh, the boathouse.
The boathouse, they like beat him up. That whole area I think is great.
Yeah, it feels good. This does, for the most part, do what I was talking about. What I was talking about, The Departed exceeding from, which is it does a lot of like the seedier parts of, you know, the crime bosses and stuff like that. So it does it well. But I'm so, you know, and I think that maybe this is a point for it, but like I'm so engrossed by the story and it feels correct to the story, you know, despite it feeling, like you said, like it does feel like a stage play at times. And
but it's the fact that it's like a stage play, but it doesn't necessarily feel like it is what it
is. Yeah, it is like a stage.
Yeah.
Nothing feels set.
Yeah, exactly. It all feels very like authentic.
Yeah. It's fine for me.
Yeah, I think I have to disagree. I'm pretty unimpressed with it, to be honest. I think a lot of it could have been like had more of an impact, more of a like more staying power into like a lot of locations, because there's a lot of locations in this movie, but none of them really feel like very engaging or very much like immersive in any way. Like there's, you know, the bar, the church, even the shipyard itself, I feel like they don't spend enough time to really capture what that world is and like that workplace. Like I feel like because it's trying to establish this like union of workers and like this kind of like issue with the bosses and stuff like that, I think it would have been nice to have like a little bit more of like freedom and a little bit more like clarity on how the buildings work, and then a little bit more of an impact in like the union worker side of things and the bosses side of things. And there's just so many places that in this movie that I just think just look very like bland, and like this is just shot on location with like not really much done to like the background or anything. I do agree that the coop and like the rooftop is a little bit more of a highlight and a little bit more like of a place and like kind of some production design that I will like always draw to for this movie. Mm-hmm. But I feel like besides that, there's nothing really that draws me to this, and the production design doesn't feel very immersive. I disagree that it does feel like a stage play to me. I mean, it doesn't feel like theatrical, but it definitely does feel like, had I not known that this was like written, I would have thought, oh, you know, this is a movie that they just like, this is a play that they just adapted to screen, and then they didn't do anything else to it, which is kind of what this feels like. There's not much an attraction and not much thought given to a lot of the locations, even the costumes. I don't think, I mean,
that is one area that I'm like, I don't know that I could point to a single costume other than maybe,
Marlon Brando.
I mean, Marlon Brando, like the coat. Yeah,
he's just in the flannel, the flannel coat. I mean,
once again, it's like, you know, they're working
on docks.
Yeah. It's like, what are they gonna wear?
But even still, like, I mean,
I don't think there's anything out of place.
It's just not. I wouldn't call it good. I would call it inspired.
What would be good then?
Just something that has an impact. Like, I mean, production design is something that is good when it has staying power, like it, you can feel yourself being very immersed in it. It's always bad when it's so like so not noticed or mm-hmm. not immersed in it. Like even something like The Godfather, which is not like in your face, it's definitely something that I think you walk away from. You're like, oh, I feel like I felt like I was in that space. I felt I knew where the locations were. I knew like the vibe of the rooms and everything. It's something like On the Waterfront. I just feel like these are just places they shot at. This is just a shipyard because they needed a shipyard. This is a church because they needed a church. Nothing feels like concrete to the story. And I think the costumes the same way. I don't think they draw any like kind of strong feeling. Not that they all have to. Like these movies don't all have like great costumes and great locations like that.
Or the same use for them, or like the ideal, not ideal, but the exact same function.
I just really feel like there was not a lot of thought put into the production design in this, be it the costumes or the location. I think a lot of the strengths in this movie are the cinematography and the acting and
the writing.
The writing.
So this, there was not a true production designer on this film, but art direction was by Richard Day, who did win Best Art Direction, Set Decoration, Black and White for On the Waterfront, as well as Best Art Decoration and Set Decoration, Black and White for A Streetcar Named Desire, and This Above All as well.
If we want to talk about stagey, Streetcar Named Desire definitely does
absolutely.
That.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That one for sure.
And also, that's several wins for Best Art Direction for The Dark Angel, Dodsworth, like I said, Streetcar Named Desire, this film. And that might be it. Oh, yep. Yeah, that's it. But it's fine. Like, I like the location, the choices of location, but I'm definitely leaning more towards where Phoenix is at. Where it's
I find a middle ground with what Phoenix is saying. Like, I can understand some of the big things, but it's not anything standout. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think it's not standout, but it could have been. There could have been elements that really worked in its favor. Like, I mean, it is black and white, so you're working with a different set of tools and, shades and looks and everything like that. But also, I mean, any object or element of mise-en-scene can really be brought to the forefront, no matter what it looks like. And, there's a lack of that in this movie that I think, could, because we talk about, like, this is an object economy that's going on in this film, and you don't see... you would think that there would be a lot of emphasis placed on that visually, but I can't... I mean, except when the one guy ends up getting crushed underneath that massive load of boxes and crates, but, I mean...
Yeah, I just...
Not quite the same thing, I don't think.
Exactly. I think overall I just feel very uninspired. It just feels very uninspired.
So you go straight into the actual story because the look is so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
But that's all I got to say. I don't know if anyone else has more on the waterfront.
On that waterfront.
Last we have our Schindler's List.
Schindler's List.
Production design by Alan Starsky, who also did The Pianist and Oliver Twist. So kind of has a look that he could...
This one, I mean...
Oh, and Euro Trip. 2004's Euro Trip.
Once again,
two masterpieces, Schindler's List and Euro Trip.
Once again,
my favorite double feature.
Production design in this movie is, pretty solid.
Yeah,
it's great. Double feature, when they get to Germany in Euro Trip, you play all of Schindler's List. Then finish Euro Trip.
between the layout design of the factory and Schindler's office, the party that they're at the beginning, like the reception. The town and then the ghetto and then the camps and the everything. I mean,
it's very well done. Goats, it's very real.
Goats like villa.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah. There's just a lot. There's a lot going on. It's a long movie.
Yes.
But I think everything is, it's pretty hitting the nail on the head. Whether it's the road paved with gravestones or.
Mm-hmm. Or even like the segment where you see how exactly the pots are made, and all of the cookware is created, like giving that much attention to a single piece of
seeing the actual all the presses and the they put the enamel coating on it.
You already established like how that's really important, and all these objects are represented, are stand-ins of the people that are being killed.
Yeah.
So I know we've talked about the scene with, collecting like all of the glasses and the gems and that
the
kind of thing.
The shoes and the teeth and the fillings.
Exactly. And it's it really works so well on a visual level, but also on a you know, meta narrative. So.
Yeah,
this is where we can talk about the colors too.
Yeah,
there are a few.
Handful, you
know, candles and coats.
The green coat.
And
the purple candles.
And the purple candles. No. The red coat and.
And you know. Of course, Oscar Schindler's violet eyes.
Yes. His bright purple eyes.
Throughout the whole movie.
Blindingly purple. It's almost unsettling.
His grandfather who's stuck in the. I'm thinking of Yu-Gi-Oh. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you are. okay. There we go. Let's reset. Reset.
I don't have anything against this one. This is just my note where I've talked about this in the last three episodes, how realistic, how, you know.
There's just a particular authenticity.
Yeah, there's a particular authenticity, and that's great for this, and it kind of feeds into the same thing I said about Les Mis last season. Everything is very era appropriate. Everything is done very well. It doesn't reach for anything. I don't think it has it. I mean, it's got.
I don't think it's supposed to, though.
Think it's supposed to either. And in that case,
whereas Les Mis, I think, could have.
Yes.
I
mean, I will say, I was getting to that.
Yeah.
But I think where this maybe loses some points is that there are some very interesting stylistic choices that are made in other ones, whereas this is very era appropriate. It does, you know, it gets the job done. It's very, you know, there's almost some documentary elements to Schindler's List and just like truly doing justice to the story, not embellishing, not, you know, making anything.
Not fabricating anything, but drawing specifically from life.
And so while it allows for some very accurate production design, I think there are some places where there's room for maybe some bolder choices, maybe something that's a little...
I mean, I think that's the achievement, is because they're basically almost perfectly recreating this, you know...
And I think that's good.
1940s Germany in 1993.
Yeah, I think you can do stuff with, like, The Godfather, where you keep everything very appropriate while still doing some very standout work that is...
Yeah. I mean, a lot of The Godfather is I mean, with the color palette, which obviously is not a factor here.
Yeah, but that, I mean, like, you know, sometimes...
The green coat.
My thought would just be that that's how it works sometimes. It's just that, you know, the film, by its very own nature, has to be weaker in some areas. So... I don't know. It's not, like I said, I don't think there's any bad choices, anything that's bad about it. I think it does just like by nature of how this film is, not lend itself to some bold production design choices.
I, am really, a fan of the production design in this movie. I think, like we were getting at, I think I agree that like it's, everything's very appropriate. Everything's very like, realistic. I think some of the things that I appreciate that are more like not necessarily for like that aren't done just merely for realism, but are also done for like movie and narrative like reasons is like I love Oscar Schindler's office that he has like the window to the work to the working floor that like because it has like it kind of shows his like his vibrance and like his like. Like the way he lives as a businessman, like it's very proper and it's very rich and like very clean and stuff like that. But also just having that window to the working floor also shows like his reminder of like what he's doing it for. Like he's seeing all the people that he's like saving and helping. So I think like that location choice and that like use of having that connection, even if it's not real, like to the factory, and how that was laid out, I think that adds another element to like, it kind of shows like inside his character and what he's trying to improve and go for. I also think, weirdly, and this is kind of like, I guess wrong to say, but all the like richness of all the Nazi stuff and how they look very like lavish and wonderful and stuff like that.
Especially in like the villa and.
Yeah. And like in the beginning scenes with like the party and stuff.
The receptions and stuff.
Yeah. Like it really shows because like.
Or even like Schindler putting together like the gift baskets that he gives out to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it like adds to the world of this place, and then it also provides that contrast too. So like just as important as it is to show like the darkness and stuff, it also is as important to show like what is happening on the other side of like what's going on. Like it's this rich, lavish, like fun lifestyle that is just, and that's what it also creates, you know, obviously like the parallel, and it makes it more grueling and stuff like that. But it just, I think really enhances like the realness of these Nazis and like what, how dark it is just to see them living these like rich, full and like happy lives, and then cut to like them, like the Jewish people just experiencing such pain and stuff.
I think about like the rich couple that are having to pack up their house and take all of their luggage and everything out, that then Schindler moves into later, and then showing up at the in the ghetto with
that is a
the
great room, one.
And it's like, oh, well, I guess this is what we have, and then the six other people walk in.
Yeah,
and it's like you have this bare bones room with nothing in it. It's,
yeah.
You know, smaller and dingy, and then they had this very lavish mansion.
Yeah, I also just love the last, like, I mean, I don't know if it's technically the last scene, but like one of the last scenes with the on the street at night with like the lines of people on the sides, and like the, there's like kind of the fire going on in the back, and just like the layout of that, it's just like a I think it's like a wonderful like place because it's so captivating, and you kind of feels like a speaker to like these like giant groups of people. It's very like eye catching and like very reminiscent of, or not reminiscent, but very much like what you remember from the movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great.
Yeah. All right.
That's all six of our remaining films.
All six of our films. Now it's ranking time.
Six flicks.
My number one was The Godfather.
That was also my number one.
Mine was Chicago.
Mine was also Chicago.
All right. My number two is Chicago.
My number two is Chicago.
My number two is Schindler's List.
Mine is The Godfather.
Oh.
So.
Chicago one?
Chicago, I think, is number one.
And then Godfather two.
And then Godfather's number two.
All right.
Okay.
And number three?
I had Schindler's List at number three.
This is where I put Birdman.
Schindler's List.
The Godfather.
So
Schindler's List.
List is number three. Number four, I put Birdman.
I put Schindler's List here.
Birdman.
Birdman.
So Birdman is number four. Number five, I put On the Waterfront.
I put The Departed.
I put The Departed.
I put On the Waterfront. And then...
And then...
That's, I take it it's flipped the other way.
It's, and it can't. It's, yeah, it's only
the inverse of The Departed.
Okay. Well, we got ourselves a tie game, folks. Brett. Oh, Brett, what did you pick?
Brett picked Schindler's List last.
So, oh, my God, Brett. This almost never happens. Yeah, we're flipped here.
All right,
all right, let's talk turkey.
Read the film Fracas bylaws.
What happens? We're 100% flipped. There's no,
there's no mathing around this. This hasn't happened in a while.
All right,
has it ever happened
with the new system?
Yeah.
I think once, maybe.
Maybe in like the Star Wars season.
I think it was a Star Wars season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
But not not often.
Yeah. I'll just say up front, I mean, y'all know my feelings about On the Waterfront, so I wouldn't be the one to budge.
Yeah.
I'm also pretty firm on the Waterfront.
It would be up to you. I mean, we can talk more about these two. Okay,
convince me on The Departed, because The Departed is low-key one of my... that it's one of my most challenging films of this octet. So... I'm not a fan of it because it looks just like there for all of the reasons that you're not into The Waterfront. I'm like, this is Boston circa 2006, and that's pretty much
they're kind of similar also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just who's
yeah.
which film is taking the most like
yeah.
initiative in the realm of production design and costuming.
I think what it came down for me, because I mean, as I mean, everyone knows, we all put these at the bottom too.
Yeah.
I think the reason why I've ranked The Departed a little bit higher is, for like all the choices with the X's, which I mean, granted, if you're not a fan of that choice, you're not a fan of that choice. I think it at least adds some kind of like, layer to this movie. Yeah.
But I look at that the same way I look at Chicago. I don't love the choices that they make, but they're strong choices that are committed.
I don't think there are that many X's actually in the
there's a lot. I can even bring you a. I even looked it up when you challenged it.
Still cinematography though. I mean,
well, not if it is the production. Like, so like, there's like the X's on the carpet, physically on or the like
there's the one on the building,
or the ones drawn, or the the ones that make like the railways, or like the
I'll look it up.
The things at the airport. There's a bunch, and there's more than I think people realize, because a lot of people just notice like the obvious ones. But I think the other reason that I would have it higher is all the stuff that all the stuff they do with Frank, I think, elevates it more for me.
Yeah, those costume design choices for Frank are
They're really like cartoonish and like and wild and vibrant. And then I think his house is also like there's a lot of like added stuff to like show his personality that he's like
lots of velvet.
Yeah, lots of velvet. He's a very like 70s like kind of rich, I think, that kind of like adds to more to his character that I think kind of build up to like the character that is Frank Costello. Yeah. I think
Matt Damon's apartment or home or whatever condo, whatever you want to call it, it's very sterile. It's very stark, which is we talked about his performance not having a lot going on, but like
the spaces he's in also
kind of reflect that like he's very self-serving. It's everything's very practical for him.
And which, cold.
Yeah. And I would also say that like it also adds to like how private he is. Like if he's got nothing like out and nothing showing that in like
on Farmiga can't put up her like family pictures because who wants to see that?
Yeah, exactly. It like adds to all the things he's really hiding and how he's really not being himself. It like kind of displays that in his apartment too.
It's
not a strong case, but it's the case I got.
I would sum it up like there's not a lot of choices, but whereas I feel like there's very few choices and on the waterfront. I feel like there are some, and that they do. There are some bold choices in this that at least like correspond appropriately to characters in a way that elevates the film beyond just being a setting.
Also, and this is a small point, not at all the main point. On the waterfront, literally not having a production designer, I feel like should also be reminded that there's not even really a proof that someone tried something with production design in this.
I mean, I think those are all strong points. I think what's going to switch me over, though, is the costuming.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I'm thinking about the...
Not Leo's hairstyle?
not necessarily doing it for me at all, but, like, I mean, I'm thinking about the richness of, like, Jack Nicholson's whole wardrobe.
Somebody decided to put Leo in a dirty goatee. Like...
that was his look he had.
Or
he had
Dingham that. With the like the big that like his, white like the big tie, the big brown tie and the white shirt.
That was Leo's early aughts look. He did that in that and Blood Diamond in Body of Lies.
Catch Me If You Can.
Well, no, that was real early. That was when Leo was still like babyface before he wanted to be gritty adult Leo.
Does he have the goatee? Does he have the cut or does he have it in Shutter Island?
That's a little bit late. That's a different era of Leo.
Yeah,
too.
That's a different. Yeah,
is
pretty
it?
Much. It's a
no.
Yeah,
I mean, 2010. It's the end of this. Yeah,
it's like 4 years. Well, okay.
He does have the goatee and Shutter Island.
Yeah, though. But to reiterate,
but it's a different goatee.
Not that different.
I think I am.
His hair's longer.
I'm going to switch my goatee. Yeah. Okay. We can. All right. Give break one the to tie. The departed.
Bye.
And
bye. Right. Goodbye on the waterfront. It's a real shame we didn't get to talk about you next week because we know what the category is.
Oh, yep. We do.
Oh,
bye.
Oof.
But
gunned down in its prime.
Guess so. Anyway.
Yeah.
This one, Carter, does sound bitter about.
A little bit. Because I really want to talk about this next week, and I thought these were pretty equivalent.
They're not equivalent.
Yeah,
the way it works, though.
It's the minutia of the it's the like 0.01%.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's the way this works.
It's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
That's it.
So it's not as egregious as The Shining, which I'm still bitter about.
It's been now nearly 2 years.
I'm aware. I'm still bitter about it.
That's a lot to keep up with.
Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like spill something in your yard and an S. Or do we want to run through the rankings?
Oh, yeah, let's run through the rankings one more time.
Okay. Just kind of all in all, number one was Chicago, The Godfather, Schindler's List, Birdman, The Departed, and we said goodbye to On the Waterfront.
Bye bye.
So, yes, tune in next week where we talk about something else.
Yep.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at CSPillars, I suppose I'm here on S. My recommendation this week is going to be... I'm going to say Avenue 5 on HBO.
Okay.
Another new HBO show. This is from Armando Iannucci, who made Veep and In the Loop and The Death of Stalin and The Thick of It. Very, 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 very funny writer. Has made some of the best political comedies of the 21st century. So, go check it out. I liked it a lot. I've thus far only seen one episode. The second episode's coming out soon. But I really liked the pilot, so.
Yeah.
And I like Armando Iannucci a lot, so go check it out.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie DeShazer. You can also find me on Byte at Robbie DeShazer. Bringing the bite out. Please listen to Tap Heads. It's our other show where we talk about craft beer.
Yeah. Me and yeah, Wendy Lopez.
Yeah. It's very exciting. We're about to do an episode of this pretty soon this week.
Yes.
So last week, I guess, when you're listening to this, an episode should have dropped. But also, if you are in Austin on February 22nd, come out and see me as a part of King Guillotine and All Men Present It's Your Funeral at Cold Town Theater at 11 p.m. We put a lot of work into this show, and we're very excited to show it to people. So thanks in advance for buying tickets and coming out to that. My recommendation this week is going to be another Disney rarity. I don't know if you would call it a rarity that I found while trying to catch up on some Disney Plus, trying to look at what I hadn't seen before. 1979.
But not Marriage Story.
Not Marriage Story. I watched this. I was not in the mood for it. It's a hard sell on me. I'm not a big Baumbach fan.
It hurts. It hurts here.
But it's okay. My recommendation, like I was starting to say, was 1979's The Black Hole on from Disney. It's a very good...
I want to see it.
It's a very interesting movie. I definitely recommend it. Go watch it.
Robert Forster.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I recommend it, which is why I'm recommending it here.
You can find me at BombSPhoenix on Twitter and on Letterboxd. I hope to tweet things you like. Still... Hopefully, this is in the future, but hopefully still doing these lists on Letterboxd that I'll be tweeting.
A week? You're hoping you do it for an extra week?
Yeah, I'm hoping. You know, who knows how long it'll go.
Find you on Byte?
Yeah. You can find me on Byte.
Hope that's taken off.
Probably the same weeks. Name.
I really do. I think it will.
I'm going to recommend, you know, it's... Yeah, sure. I'm going to recommend Wet Hot American Summer. That's another movie that I just watched recently, rewatched, and it's hilarious. It's so funny. It's I think iconic right now at this point. It was a cult film, but I don't know if it still has that moniker because everyone kind of knows about it. But it's super funny.
It's like a cult in quotation marks.
Yeah, at this point, it's got
kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, it's a like cult
film in quotation marks.
Yeah. It's got a bunch of people that I'm sure you know, Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, Michael Ian Black, Bradley Cooper. Tons of people. If you haven't seen it, highly check it out. Highly recommend checking it out. It's great.
It's not on Netflix anymore.
No, but the two shows that Netflix made are on there, so try those out too, I guess.
Yeah. Shannon?
All right. Hello, everyone. You can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5 and Byte at Shantabulous. We'll see what happens in the next 2 weeks, but I think it should be exciting. So this week I'm going to be recommending, I've been scrolling through my Letterboxd trying to find something that really popped out at me. I'm not sure if we recommended it either, so we'll find out. I'm going to be recommending the film that used to be on Netflix. I'm not sure if it is anymore, but it's 2013's Locke, directed by Steven Knight.
Yeah, I think it's still on Netflix.
It is one of my runaway favorite films that I watched last year. It's a very simple premise. It's a man driving home and it having one bevy of four or five different conversations with different voice actors, including... his son is played by Tom Holland. His mistress is Olivia Colman, and his wife is the lady who played Captain Marvel's Captain America's love interest, rather. She got her own ABC show. What's her name? Peggy Carter?
Oh, Haley
Atwell?
Yes. I think that's her. I'll have to check. But it's really, really good, and it just isolates the acting ability that one can have in one's voice. It's very compelling. There's not a lot of production design, not a lot of cinematography choices, you know. Actually, no, there are a lot of cinematography choices that are made in a very small space, but I really loved it. It's quite good, and it's only 85 minutes, so I do recommend you give it a watch. Yeah.
All right. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at FilmFracas, and as well as on Facebook and Instagram, although we don't post there as much. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another brand new episode. And this field is getting whittled down week by week.
Yep. The final five.
Who knows? We didn't have a double elimination this week.
Yeah.
These movies are too good to.
Is Carter wishing we had had a double elimination this
thrown
week?
Out? Maybe a little bit, but it's fine. It's fine.
The Departed lives.
But
The Departed.
I actually really like The Departed. For now. But here we are.
Here we are. You having to claim you don't like The Departed. Yeah. It happens.
I'd like The Departed. It just keeps coming up at the end on these for me.
It's fair.
I just like everything else more.
Yeah, that's... Uh-huh. Yeah.
What?
There was only one movie this season I didn't like.
I know. I feel tired.
And that's in the bonus episode.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
You said it last episode. You said
it will
be
released on Bite.
You said you didn't.
No, I did, yeah. I didn't like
just
Grand Hotel.
Just 6 seconds of me, I'm like, I don't like Grand Hotel.
Just loops. I don't like Grand Hotel.
It's all right. They didn't either.
Really?
It was...
Not really.
Hard to like. I'm sorry.
I didn't start the attack. He's the one who made it a mob attack.
But now that you're bringing me into
suddenly,
it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think we all have 1-star reviews on Letterboxd for it, except for Robbie. So
I kept my chill.
I don't think I have a review for it on Letterboxd.
I believe you put 4 stars.
I love it. It's great.
Well, anyway. Now this ended really awkward.
He's coming after me, but I'm like, y'all are in this too.
I'm not coming after you. I just
all right. Saying, everyone get a Bite account. Follow 5208 Media. We're gonna go on Letterboxd.
Talk about. We're gonna watch Grand Hotel in 6 second movies. Increments.
Follow us all. Get 8 hours of sleep.
Anyway, tune in next week
for an episode.
Yep.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. At Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.